Let me go ahead and be introducing Chris. Chris is a licensed marriage and family therapist in the DFW area. He's currently a PhD candidate at MFT at Texas Tech University. Chris received his BS in Youth and Family Ministry as well as an MS in Christian Education from ACU. He worked as a youth minister from 96 until 2008 in New York, Abilene, and Fairfax, Virginia. Well traveled. During his time in ministry, he developed several programs aimed at spiritual development and family cohesion. He's been working with marriages, families, teens, and children since 1996 in both a church and a clinical setting. Chris integrates biblical insight and clinical experience, creating compassionate connections to bring about healthy relationships. And that's really what we're all talking about and trying to do within our families. And so Chris is also good friends with several people here. I won't name names, but we don't want you to hold that against him. So Chris Bedard, come share with us.
Thank you guys for having me. We really enjoyed the service today. We actually got bread, too, which is awesome. My kids really like that. This is such a friendly place. I was telling Jack, the reason why you can't get people to sit down is because everybody just likes to talk, right? We just want to visit. You don't get to see each other, you know, as much as you want. So when you do, you get a chance, you want to do it. All right. How many people in here do we have that have kids between ages 0 and 3? 0 and 3, raise your hand. Be proud. Okay, a few. How about between 3 and 6? 3 and 6. Everybody's kind of like, eh. How about between 7 and 12? Oh. Everybody's like, yes. Okay, keep 7 and 12. Keep your hands up. Everyone else, look at them. They have been where you are. And they are still here. Everything is fine. How many people have one child in the family? One child, okay. Some people aren't sure exactly. How about two kids? Two kids. Three? Oh, wow. Four? Four. Five? Five. Six. Six. Okay, five, hold your hands up. You should be teaching this. You should be down here. Five, that's a lot. My wife and I, Mindy, who's down the front, I make her sit up front all the time. She gets cold, but she does it. We have two kids. We have an 8 and 7. My daughter Parker turned 7 yesterday. So we have 3rd grade and 2nd grade. We tried for 6 years for my son and went through infertility and that whole jazz. And then when we had my son, the day we had him, he came a little bit early, and we didn't know if it was a boy or girl. We didn't want to know on purpose. And then when we had my son, he comes out, and they said, it's a baby. And we're like, what is it? And they said, it's a boy. And then we looked at each other and said, now what do we do? Literally, because we had not thought that far ahead. And that's what I find typically sometimes happens with parenting. We are very excited to have kids, but then when they come, what do we do? If there would just be one book, one manual that you could pick up that would tell you exactly what to do, when to do it, that would be awesome. If you're here today to find out the one answer, I'm so sorry. You're going to be disappointed. There's not one answer when it comes to parenting, right? There is several answers. And what I'm going to try to do today, Jack had told me a little bit about what he's kind of looking for and what you guys typically do. So I'm gonna run through what I would do with typical couples or families that come see me and run through a few things. And then at the end, I'm going to show you a few techniques that I do, that we do with our kids, that I have taught other people. It's probably going to be a little bit different than some of the things that you might have done before, but I have found them to be very helpful. And so I'll kind of get to that. And so I'm also going to ask for a volunteer. So just be thinking about that as we get going. I'm going to turn in Proverbs chapter 4. That's where I'm going to start. Proverbs chapter 4. And I'm going to read from starting around verse 3. I'll read about 6 verses. And this is Solomon writing and talking about his childhood. He says, "When I was a boy in my father's house, still tender, and an only child of my mother, my father, he taught me and said, 'Lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands, and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. Wisdom is supreme. Therefore, get wisdom, though it costs all you have. Get understanding. Esteem her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you. She will set a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor.'" And then later in the chapter, he tells his son, "Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of your life." Now, I think that's pretty fascinating, because if you know the story of Solomon, God gives him a chance to ask for anything he wants. Anything. And what does he ask for? He asked for wisdom. I don't think there's a coincidence there. I think the reason why he asked for coincidence is two reasons. One, it's smart, makes sense, because he was a king, he needed discernment. Two, it's because his parents talked to him about it. He just said when he was young, his family, basically his mom and dad, came and said, "Look, I want you to get wisdom." And then they went about teaching him how to get wisdom. And I think that's very, very important. We don't live in a world that's going to teach our kids wisdom. We don't live in that world, right? We have to do that. That's our responsibility. Does that make sense? So what I'm going to try to do today is talk about that and talk about a few things that I think can help us, help our kids kind of get wisdom. Now, does that mean our kids are always going to do the right thing? Probably not. And does that mean they're always going to do things that are a lot of fun? Probably not. Absolutely not. But I also think there's a little bit of value in them messing up, too. So I'm going to try to talk about all these things kind of at the same time. And then I think at the end there's going to be some question and answer, which will be good. So, but the basic premise is that we want our kids to grow and mature and be able to make good decisions. That's so important. We want them to be able to make good decisions. We want them to have wisdom. We want them to have discernment. Right? Okay. There's a couple of things that happen when kids get older. You know, those of you that have kids 2 to 6, and you don't need me to tell you this, they're all about one thing, them. They're all about me. Everybody's shaking their head like, yep. They are all about themselves. They are not necessarily aware that other things are around them, necessarily. Now, we might like to help them try to figure that out, but between 2 and 6, they're just kind of all about me. It changes a little bit when you get to 7. Between 7 and 11, logic starts to take over. Their brains start changing. Logic starts to take over a little bit more. And then those great questions come up. All the good, really good questions like, why? And then fill in the blank. Well, I need you guys to go to bed. Why? You need to get some sleep. Why? Right? So all the whys start. And it's not just why, it's like, well, they don't have to do that, right? This person's not doing it. It just happened just now as we were sitting here. The little boy that was giving out the bread had one more and gave it to my son, and my daughter's like, what? What's up? Here I am. Why not me? And of course we're like, well, you'll just share this. And my son immediately says, no. I will not share this. I will not share my bread with my sister. Now, he didn't say it that way. But in his head, that's what he's thinking. And sometimes, don't you just want to grab their heads and go, why don't you listen to me? Right? We want them to have wisdom. Here's the thing. We, hopefully, collectively have what? Wisdom. Why? Right? We have experience on them. We have years on them, right? We have that. We want to give that to them. The problem is we try to give all of it to them at once sometimes. And their little brains cannot handle it. They just can't do it. Right? So what we did is what every parent does. My wife took the bread and put it in her purse. Right? And then we'll do whatever we're going to do later. Now, luckily, the boy came back and gave my daughter a piece of bread, too. It was very sweet. It was very sweet. But I guarantee you, they were not going to be happy about sharing that. Does that mean that we don't talk to them about sharing or caring for other people? No, we do, and you do. But their little brains, that's just kind of the thing that's going on. I hate to say this, but we're not that much different. Have you read Exodus? It took 400 years for Egypt to get into Israel. It took them 40 years to get Egypt out of them. They were 11 days march from the promised land, right? It took them 40 years. So we're all kind of a little bit about us. We do that. But when kids are little especially, their little brains just don't work that way. Now, as they get older, it does get better. As they get into the upper grades, like 4th, 5th, 6th grade, the logic does start to take over. You can have a little more logical conversations with them. It does help. That does happen. And I think one of the things that also happens that sometimes gives us a hard time is the independency starts to emerge. And that sometimes is like, ugh. How many in this room, and I've got two of them, and they're very different, but I've got two of them. How many in this room have kids that you would say are pretty independent, like, I will do this? Raise your hand. Be very proud. Raise your hand high. Everybody look around at these folks. All right? Independent kids, right? That sometimes we would call challenging kids, right? So I've got two of them. My son cried for the first 2 years of his life every time he hit a car seat. Like, literally, his bottom would hit that, and it was waterworks. Here they come. Like, we couldn't do anything. When he got big enough and tall enough for us to turn him around, it was like he was fine. But 2 years, and my poor wife driving around with him just screaming, playing VeggieTales songs over and over and over, trying to get anything to work, right? My daughter is very much, I don't know if any of you guys have seen this move with facial expressions and the grunt, the silent grunt, which they know that they're not really supposed to talk back, but they can do the grunt, right? How many of you ever heard the grunt? Raise your hand. Yes. How many of you ever given the grunt when you've walked away from your kids? I'm going to kill them. They don't stop right now. How many people think, I just don't know what I'm going to do when they do that? Well, here's two things that are happening. The first thing that's happening is they're flooded with emotion. A lot of emotion. So everybody hold your hand up. I'm going to teach you about the brain in 1 minute. This is awesome. Take your thumb and tuck it in. Close your four fingers. That's your brain. Now look at your brain. On the right side of your brain is all of your emotions. How many right brain people do we have? I'm a right brain person. That's why I'm touchy-feely. My wife is kind of right brain, sorta. Left brain, logic, reason. If you lift your fingers, this little thumb guy, deep inside, fear, hurt, feeling alone, feeling like they're going to be alone. So if we have our fingers like this, when our kids start getting upset, it's like blowing the lid off, right? It's like this top part doesn't want to have anything to do with this bottom part, right? That's what's happening with our kids. Our kids are all of a sudden going, well, nope, I'm not doing that. My anger is so powerful that this is what has to happen, right? And what we do too many times as parents, and I am so guilty of this, we try to tell them to stop the middle part, the bottom part, the anger. How many of you can ever stop anger? If you can, you should write a book. You'll make $1 million. You can't stop that. But what we can do is hug that middle part with the behavior. Does that make sense? I just taught you about the brain. If nothing else, you just learned about the brain in 1 minute. That's literally how our brain, now obviously there's a lot of things that go along with it, but there's a right side, a left side, an upper, and a bottom, okay? And whenever we have fits, whenever things get upset, it doesn't matter if your kids are 1, 2, up to 12, 11, 35, however old, that stuff comes out, man. When you get angry, it's like, here it comes, right? You can actually teach your kids this. You can teach them to know that this is happening. Okay? I believe this. One, because I've done it. I've taught it with other people. And two, because I've seen it happen. You can teach this, which I'm going to do. And I'm putting my plug in now for the volunteers. So be thinking about that, because I'm going to call someone up. Okay. When we think about how our kids do those things, there's some things that probably needs to happen. The first thing is we need to reclaim this word discipline. If I say discipline, most of the time, people think punishment. If I say, well, we need to have discipline with our kids, we typically think punishment. I want to reclaim that word. I want that word to mean what it actually means. Discipline means teaching, right? It means modeling. It means taking by the hand. For example, in Ephesians 6, and we just read it. Someone just read it today, and I'm going to read from it. Ephesians chapter 6, which, by the way, starts in chapter 5 and kind of runs the rest of the book, all the kind of holy living and families. The first part of chapter 6 says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Which most of the time we want to stop there, right? We want to say, well, you just need to do what I say. You need to keep doing what I say. Anytime the why comes up, it's because I say so. That works when they're 2 or 3. When they're 12, not as much. When they're 15, forget it. It doesn't work. Why? Because they're not listening to you at that point when they're 15. So some of the stuff I'm talking about right now, if you can start early enough and you can help them kind of start to help themselves, it makes things better as they get older. The second part of this says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on earth. I believe in that. I believe that they should be honoring the father and mother. I believe it wouldn't be in here if it wasn't important, right? It's very important. The last part says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Which again harkens back to what Solomon was saying about wisdom, instructing our kids about wisdom, which in certain instances, and I don't have time to go in, there's so many things, when Jack was telling me about this, there's so many things I wanted to do, but I'm going to try to hone in on emotions real quick. That's kind of where I want to land, because I think that's where, if we can grab that first, a lot of things fall in place. So from here on, it's going to be a lot about the emotions, so we're going to remember our brain, we're going to be talking about that. In terms of wisdom, letting them connect with what is happening. Okay? All right. So reclaiming this word discipline to be teaching. Okay? If we just think about discipline, if we think about teaching, Proverbs 4:4, he talks about how Solomon taught him. He was teaching him how to get wisdom. He's teaching him that it was important. Proverbs 22:6, start them off in the way they should go. That's the whole verse of train your kids and train them up in the way they should go. When they're old, they will not flee from it, right? But there's this idea of training, things that are done intentionally. And you wouldn't be sitting here if that wasn't important to you, right? How many people in this room think, okay, I want my kids to make good decisions? I'm assuming everyone will raise their hand, right? Okay, so we want to train them. So the parents become the trainers. The children are the recipients of the training. Training can really only take place when the kids feel safe and secure inside of what they're being trained to do. Now, what in the world am I talking about? Okay, has anyone in this room ever played tag, chase, right? Okay, maybe today you're going to play it, some of you. When you're being chased, it's fun. It's a little bit exciting, and if they get close enough to you, it provides a little bit of anxiety, not too much, because it's still fun. When you're running, as soon as you get to base, whatever base is, how do you feel? Safe. They can tag you a million times, and they will, but it does not matter. That's why little kids, when they're playing tag, if I'm here and they're standing over there, what are they going to make base? They're going to make this base, right? They want to be safe. Adults aren't different. We want to be safe. We want to be secure. So we want to be able to train our kids in places that are safe and secure. Now, I'm not just talking about physically. I mean, some things, you know, physically secure are important. Spiritually secure is important. emotionally secure is important. Mentally secure is important. All those things are important. When safety and security happens, I'm telling you, people's lives change. I'll give you an example. So I've got a family that I was working with last year, and it was a family that had adopted two boys about 4 or 5 years ago and then adopted three girls at the same time about 2 years later. So they went from 2 to 5, and the three girls had some big-time things that were happening with them. And so we were kind of walking through this idea of safety and security with them, and I'd met with the parents a little bit. We had talked through it, and we kind of came up with some strategies. And those girls came in and wrecked their life, man. I mean, they had not had safety and security ever in their life. So it took us a while, and we started doing some things, and they started doing some things with them. The girls started to figure out that it was okay to be upset. And then all of a sudden, they started kind of changing a little bit, and you could see it in the sessions. When they first came in, it was like everyone was ready to kill everybody. So they come in, and I love that when they come in, like, that's my favorite thing. They come in, and they're just like, I do not want to be with these people right here. I do not like them. I love that. It's awesome. Not really. I hate it. I can't stand it. But that's what happens in therapy. They come in at their worst. And so all I did was just start asking questions, and we started talking. And about 5 months later, they come in, and they're like hanging out. They're fine. They're talking. But what had happened is mom and dad had created a very safe place. Now, they put structure in place. They put boundaries in place. There were punishments and consequences. Those things were happening for them, too. But they had found this way to be safe with our kids. And I think that is so important, because if you're not able to be safe, what are you going to do? You're going to increase, you're going to exacerbate your kids. You're going to increase bitterness. You're going to increase irritation. That's what you're going to do. You don't want to do that. You want them to be able to come to you and talk to you. Okay? All right. So, how am I doing on time? Okay, good. This is going to be good. All right. So let me talk about a couple of things in terms of, I want to try to get to three things. When we talk about meltdowns, how many of your kids have ever had a meltdown? I'm talking about meltdown. And it always happens in the most opportune place, too, like in the checkout line of the store, which I got a bone to pick with grocers, because they put all the candy where? Right at eye level, right? Everything's right there. Can I have this? Can I have that? What about this? Right? Sometimes my wife and I will like sneak our kids out the back door just so we don't have to go through some of that stuff. You want to do that. Meltdowns. Where's a place, and you can just kind of shout these out, where's a place where your kids might have a little bit of a meltdown? Where would it be? Toy aisle. Oh, man, that's awesome. Walmart. Walmart's like meltdown heaven. It really is. Where else? That's good. Church. Your kids don't have meltdowns at church. This is like holy ground. No one has meltdowns here, right? We couldn't even keep our kids still over here. I mean, we struggle with that. Where else? Those are good. Daycare. Who said daycare? Oh, yeah. Daycare. Restaurants. That's my favorite. Oh, love it. I'm going to have a good meal. We're going to hang out. Nope. We're not. I love that. Where else? Anywhere else? Where else? Trying to leave the playground, like Chick-fil-A or a park. Some kids just walk out nice. They just walk to get their shoes on, go to the car. They're like on clouds. And then some kids are like, well, I'm not leaving. Sorry. I'm not. And then it's just, right? Blow up. My son has blown up. And my daughter. They do it differently, but they blow up. Here's a technique that I would like to show you to help you with these blow-ups. In my experience, this has worked between... Now, my kids are 8 and 7, but we started this about 1.5 years ago. So 6, 7, for sure. I know for sure it works between 2 and 3, because I've done it with other kids. All the way up to probably 11 or 12, it'll work. There's a little give and take there. But I'm going to need a volunteer, and I need a brave person. Anybody? Come on. It'll be good. Come on up. All right. Everybody's whooping and hollering like this is something. All right. Good. Because they don't have to do it. What's your name?
Justin Walker.
Justin Walker. I'm Chris. Nice to meet you.
We've met before, but it was...
See, I don't even remember. See? We met for real? Where at?
I don't know.
Okay.
A wedding, I think.
Wedding. That sounds good. Let's go with that. Now, Justin's quite a bit taller than me, right?
Am I going to play the dad and you're going to be the kid?
Not yet. Not yet. That's good, though. I like it. So... Here, this is actually good. God did this. So this is actually good. This is actually what your kids see. I'm your kid. This is the parent. What am I doing?
Looking up.
I'm looking up, right? How many of you, raised by show of hands, like to be hovered over? Like it. Love it. I want you to stand over me. It's awesome. Don't like that, right? Because what's this saying? Now, he's not threatening me, obviously. Justin would never do that. He probably has perfect kids, and he's a perfect dad. So he would never do that. But what does this say when you're a little bit upset with your kids and you're standing over them? What does it say? Anybody? Intimidating. What else? What? Threatening. A little bit, right?
I'm in charge.
I am in charge. Which is true. Okay? Don't hear me say, abdicate your authority. Don't do that. You're a parent. However, what is the difference between this and just, I want you to point at me like this. Okay, what's the difference between that? And now I'm going to
hold it.
Yeah, just hold it up. What's the difference between this? Everybody got it? Everybody see it? And I want you to get down on one knee and put your hand on my shoulder. What's the difference? More open, right? A little less threatening, non-verbally, right? There is, hold our brains back up. Inside of here is threat. If this sucker goes off, instant. So we want to connect, and then we want to redirect. Let me show you how to do it. It's pretty easy. All right, stand up. You did a very good job. Now, here's what I want you to do. Whenever I say go, what I want you to do is I want you to get back on one knee and put your hand on my shoulder and say, I know you're upset right now, but I'm right here with you.
Okay.
Go.
I know you're upset right now, but I'm right here with you.
Okay. Now, that seems cheesy because we're doing it up here, right? Who thinks, oh, this is never going to work? Okay, you can stand back up. That's awesome. Yeah, you're doing awesome. You're doing so great. I'm going to tell you right now, 99% of the time that's going to work, and here's the reason why, and you can have a seat. Thank you. Y'all give Justin a big hand. That's awesome. Here's the reason why it's going to work. Because on the right side of our brain is the emotion part, and that lid's about to fly off. When you connect with your kids, and it can be anything like what he's doing, I always suggest you get below their eye line. What if they're on the floor, Chris? Lay down on the floor. I've done it with my daughter. It does not feel great, but it works 99% of the time. My daughter will try to get, my wife's like, she tries to get lower, she tries to go down. She goes as low, because she knows what we're doing, and she will go low, and I just lay right down. I've laid on the floor with her. Now, it can be something as little as put your hand on them. Okay? There's a lot of research that shows when newborns up to around age 2, when you do skin to skin, moms or dads, dendrites in their brains go crazy. These connections go off all around. There is something about human touch that's so important. I took a mission trip to the Dominican Republic with teenagers for about 6 years when we were in Virginia. We went to hospitals. We didn't know the language. We didn't know much about it. And there were some crazy things going on there. We had kids that would go in, and they would sit there and just put their hands on people. There's power. God made us to have connection, right? If you do what Justin just did, and that's just one example, if you do that, 99% of the time, here's what's going to happen. The kids will say something to the effect of, okay, when you say, I'm right here with you, what you're telling them is, one, you're not alone. Two, Even though you're freaking out, I love you anyway. I don't care if you're freaking out. I'm not happy about it. It's not making me feel real comfortable, but I love you. That's what you're telling them, especially not verbally. They will immediately say, okay. Now, here's the thing. The second part of this is very important, because if we stop there, then we're kind of being permissive with them to just kind of throw these fits. So we don't want to stop there. The second part of this is very important. The second part is after they have actually calmed down, which could take a little time. My daughter takes longer than my son. My daughter takes a little while. She has to go in her room and spin on her chair and get clothes out and whatever she got to do. And then you come back later and say, man, you were really upset. What was going on? What you said was kind of hurtful. Can you tell me what was happening? At that point, instead of the lid being off, the lid's back on, and logic is setting in a little bit, and the emotions aren't flipping out, and they're able to talk through what's happening. For example, with my son, the other day, we were going to soccer, and we had parked right here, and the practice that he was going to was way over on the other side of the field. And he gets a little bit nervous when he has to go do something, especially when it's new. And he was starting to kind of get like, I don't want to do this. And of course, immediately in my head is I'm thinking, what? Well, I paid $200. You're gonna play soccer, right? But I shoved that down for a second and I said, well, buddy, you know what? I'm right here with you. I think you're gonna be okay. And he goes, okay. And he just walked right over, straight across the field. And later on, I came up to him. I said, hey, bud, how are you able to walk across that field? And he said, well, I just walked over there. But you're teaching them wisdom, emotional maturity. If there would be more emotional maturity, I would not have a job. I would never have anyone in therapy. Emotional maturity is so important. And I believe that that is part of wisdom. Are you guys tracking what I'm saying? Is this making sense? Now, I know some people are like, yeah, that sounds right, but it's not going to work. It ain't going to hurt you to try it. You have nothing to lose. Zero. Now, you have to keep doing it. With my daughter, it's been different. She has not put the lid back on as quickly as my son. She will roll on the ground, and I'll tell her that one thing. And then sometimes we have to say, well, you need to go over here and figure out what's going on, and we kind of check on her. But that, doing that one thing with those two moves, I'm telling you, changes kids. Because then what you start having is you start having kids that all of a sudden, you can teach, and this is what I was kind of getting to before, you can teach them about the brain too. You can teach them, because when you go back to them and say, man, when you were upset, you were like, your brain was like flipping out. What, you know, it seemed like you were really upset. But then when you calmed down, you kind of started hugging your thumb, and you were starting to kind of calm yourself down. Sometimes they need to learn that. Now, here's the deal. Here's one way that this will go horribly wrong. And it's gone horribly wrong for us. If you lose your cool, this will not work. I'm right here with you. You're okay. Nah, that's not going to work. That's what's called exacerbating. You'll just get... So, what do I do then? Well, there's a couple of things. And this is what I kind of want to... I'm going to end with this, and then we can do some question and answer, but... When we talk about calming ourselves as parents, I think that's kind of underrated a little bit. That's not talked about as much. Man, keeping your cool as a parent is so hard. Oh, my goodness. Like, I'm a naturally competitive person, but all of my competitiveness went dormant until I had kids. And when my son stepped on the soccer field the first time, it was like, oh, we are winning everything. Like, I see Olympics. He is going to play professionally. He's going to England and play. I mean, it's like crazy, you know. That's what we do, you know, because we want certain things for our kids. And we have our own, hey, I hate to tell you this, we have our own brains, right? Any of you have triggers that set you off? If you say no, you're lying and you're in church and you can't do that. Yes, we all have triggers that set us off. We know what they are. Some of them, unfortunately, come with our kids. How many of you know if there's one thing that they're going to say, there's maybe just one thing, and they know it, right? And sometimes we think they're going to do this on purpose. kind of they do when they get to be 7 or 8 and above. They're trying to get those reactions. You know why? They're not trying to make you mad. They want to make sure that they're okay. They're going to make sure that you're not going to throw them out. I know this sounds totally crazy. They want to make sure that you're not going to push them away just because they get mad. When you keep your cool, you win. When you lose your cool, you lose. I'll give you an example from my own life. Very transparent. So my son played soccer, like I said, this first time. It sounds like we play soccer all the time. We really don't. I don't know why I'm using this example, but he played two seasons, and then we were going to do like this. They have this like academy thing where they can go learn skills, and we were like, hey, this will be awesome. My son's like, I don't know. Which when I was growing up, it would be like, well, if there's a ball, my mom always says if there's a cow turd and she told me it was a ball, I'd play with it. My son's not like that. He's like, I don't know. Maybe I'll play Minecraft, which, by the way, Minecraft, if we had time for that, we would go into it, but we don't. He didn't want to play, and I kind of said, okay, that's cool, acting like it was cool, but in my mind, I was like, inching up, here I am. Nope, that's not cool. We need to do this. This will be good for you. All these things, right? We tell ourselves. So I went back and said, passive aggressively, are you sure you don't want to play? No, I don't want to play. Here I am. Whoop, here I am. I'm almost like, you know, code 5 here. And I go back in, I say, buddy, I think you need to play. But it wasn't nice like that. It was like, you're going to play. You're going to play. And I walked out of the room. And I went to the restroom. And I felt good. I felt like, yeah, this is what we're going to do. I'm the parent. This is what we're going to do. And I walked back down the hall past his room. And he's on his bed with his head down, crying. Now, not like sobbing uncontrollably, not like freaking out, not like yelling, crying. And I just went in, I sat down, and I said, what's wrong, buddy? And he said, why do I have to play? And at that point, I realized that I won the argument, but I lost the relationship, lost the connection. I get very emotional thinking about it. It was a very big deal for me because I failed, which, by the way, you're going to fail. Sorry. It's okay. We fail all the time. I put my hand on his shoulder and I said, buddy, I don't care if you play soccer. You don't ever have to play again. I don't care. It was like I told him he won $1 million or he was going to get to play Minecraft uncontrollably for years. Every weight came off. And you know what? He plays soccer now. We didn't make him. He just wants to. Because it's fun, right? That's an example of when we get in our head of something and we get our own triggers that go off, if we don't keep our cool, we'll lose it. Now, listen, you're going to lose it. It's going to happen. I want to say this blessing over you. God loves you. He loves you so much, He sent His Son for you. In this room, He sent His Son for you. There's a song we sing at church called Good, Good Father. Lord, you're a good, good father. That's who you are. And I am loved by you. That's who I am. God loves you, each one of you in this room. He has forgiven you already. That's how much He loves you. There's no such thing as perfect parents because there's no such thing as perfect people. Right? It doesn't happen. Now, I will say, if we can learn that that's actually a big win if you can learn you're not perfect because that causes a lot of anxiety in parents. I'm working with several stay-at-home moms right now that have severe anxiety because they want to do things just right. I got to do it just right. If it's not just right, then my kids are going to be, they're going to be drug addicts and they're just going to leave home. And it's like if they blow up one time at Chick-fil-A, it's like, well, that's it. That's it. They're done. They're gone. It's not like that. It doesn't happen that way. You guys are equipped with everything you need to be a parent. You have everything you need. God has given you everything you could possibly hope for. You know why? Because when you looked around this room, you are not alone. Look around here. You're not alone. If we start telling stories, if someone over here started telling a story about something that happened with their kids, good or bad, someone over here would go, oh yeah, that happened. That happened with me. Right? That's because we live in community. That's very important. So I'm kind of getting off script a little bit, but I feel like God just told me to say that. That's perfect. See, perfect timing with the bell. All right? Jack, are we going to do questions or I'm not sure how much time I've got. Otherwise, I'll just keep talking, and we probably don't want that. 5 minutes? Questions? Yes, shoot them. Yes. Yes. So you're talking, he's talking, does everybody hear that? He's talking about what if it's not like the best opportune time to do that? That's a great question. There's nothing wrong with removing your kids from something and then doing it with them. There's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, you want them to be safe. But I'll say this. I have done this in Chick-fil-A. Someone said playgrounds. I've done it at playgrounds, Chick-fil-A. Yeah, my wife did it. She taught at the same school where my son was. She did it in the hallway with him in school. And then you go back. That's the thing. The key is going back and talking to him later. Otherwise, you're kind of saying you can just do this. You don't want that. You want to go back and talk to him later because you're trying to let them gain a little bit of understanding of what's going on. That's very important. Does that make sense? But yeah, if it's not opportune, then that's fine. Sometimes the inopportune time might be because you feel uncomfortable. You know, I'm not going to lie. Justin, how'd you feel bending on one knee? How was that? Is it awesome? No. What? Not physically and just kind of felt weird. And by the way, when I work with couples, guess what? I do it with couples too. I make them sit there and look at each other and I get them below eye level and I'll talk with them too. So it works with them. Yes. Toddler stage, yeah, that's a good one. The one thing about toddlers, they forget so quickly, right? So they might just go crazy and they blow their lid and then like, oh, whatever, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, they're just like playing. The key is you're trying to connect with them and redirect with them, right? So sometimes as long as you're connecting with them and saying, I know you're upset right now, I can see you're upset. And they might still be going nuts, but probably 2 minutes later, like, I don't know, why are you talking? Why are you touching me? What's happening? You know, what's happening? But that a lot of times with toddlers does happen, and that's just kind of normal for them. It does. I find as they get older, this works even more, which you would think it would be the reverse. So one thing that you can do with toddlers, I think, is if you can have like a reset button with them somehow, like in your mind, okay, we're going to do this. Your voice matters. The way you talk. That's why kindergarten teachers and pre-K teachers, when they talk, so they're so nice and everybody's, hey friends, how's everybody? There's a reason why they do that, because it keeps things calm. Does that make sense? I think honestly, with toddlers, it's a lot of keeping your cool. You've got, especially if you have two of them running around. My wife had two of them at one point, and it's like crazy. Absolutely. Absolutely, if you can get them to do it. Because sometimes, now, if you're a grandparent in here and you have your kids, maybe you're raising them, which does happen, it's different because you're kind of the parent. Now, we'll say we have grandparents and they love our kids and they don't do our rules sometimes. So that there can be a difference there, but you can do this in a lot of different ways, and you can for sure do it with grandparents. Jack, I think this is another thing. This is a totally different thing. I would say yes. Yes. See who can get the lowest. If you and your spouse can see who can get the lowest, then you're not fighting anymore. Right? A lot of subliminal messaging in there. It's church. We can talk about that. That's cool. Yes. Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's awesome. You can if they do that, especially as they get older, they're going to do that at first because if they're not used to this, first of all, they're not going to do it. They're not going to understand it. That's why the nonverbal is so important, because you can still be down there and let them shrug. And what I would say is let them walk however far they're going to go, and because they're going to stop, because they're going to do this, they're going to walk. And I guarantee you, they're going to look back once, for sure. If you're still waiting right there, they know that you're serious, and that something's going on. But the nonverbal part is very important. What happens is when they do the shrug, what do we want to do? That's it. You're done. Grounded for life. No phone, no dating, no car, ever. Right? So it does work. It does work. You just have to be a little more patient. If those things don't work, which I said 99%, there is a 1%. My daughter did not take to this. We had to be a little more creative. One of the things my wife did, she started using different language. Like I said, I'm right here with you. With my son, we'll say, hey, we're on the same team. He relates to that. With my daughter, it's kind of same team sometimes. I'm right here with you sometimes. I notice you're upset. What's going on? The key is you want to help them start self-soothing. Otherwise, you're doing it for them all the time. The last thing I will say about that is if we don't start helping our kids work through some of that stuff, then what we're actually telling them to do is stuff their emotions down and keep all that stuff hidden. That will keep me in business forever. Because if you're an emotional stuffer, and we all know we just do that sometimes, then you don't actually acknowledge that things are going on. So, any other questions? These are really good. Yeah, start early. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, teenagers is a whole different conversation, right? Totally different. All right, cool. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. That's good. That's good. He didn't have to guess. Kids don't like guessing. He doesn't listen, though. Yeah. Yeah, always give him a warning. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's awesome. Heads up warnings are always good, as long as you can get them. And then you got to keep it, though. That's the key. One more. Yeah, that should just happen. It should happen almost instantly. Because what you're doing is you're engaging the right part of their brain to show empathy to. This is so technical. But you're showing empathy to the right part of their brain, the emotion part. You're showing empathy to it right then. In other words, you're saying, I understand that you're upset. When they start calming down, that when they're calm, and you'll know when they're calm. How many of you know when your kids are calm, like calmer, right? Then you can go and talk to them. If you try to do it all at once, we typically end up lecturing. And you don't want to lecture, because then they're not, whatever, they're spacing out. Does that make sense? There is some timing involved, though. And this is what I tell people about the timing. Try it. See what works and see how long it takes, because every kid's different too. With my son, it's almost like that. With my daughter, it takes like 5 minutes. So it's just sometimes it's different. I'm not staying down for 5 minutes, but I'm telling them initially, and then my daughter's kind of like walking away, kind of. I think personally in her head, she's like, should I do this? Should I not? I don't know if this is all right. My son's like, okay, yeah, it's cool, right? So everybody's different. But you want to be below that below the eye line is very important, and the follow up is very important. All right. Now that's just one thing. I mean, there's some other things that you can do, but I hopefully that helps.
Thank you, Chris. Let's give him a hand for everybody. Thank you.